This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
I know what you're thinking. Every hour is Mystery Hour at the moment. And actually, in many ways it is. But we will continue in the rest of the week, or however much time remains to us before the pips start squeaking. We'll continue to provide answers as regularly as we ask questions. But this is, of course, an hour dedicated to questions of a largely non-political nature. 4 minutes after 12 is the time. And if you have a question to which you are desperately craving an answer, then the number you need is 0345 606 0973. If you hear somebody else ask a question to which you know the answer, then guess what? The number you need is 0345 606 0973. Is that it? I mean, don't ring me if your question's rubbish. Have a look, if you can, at the website, lbc.co.uk, to see if the question has been asked before, although I'm a lot less stringent on that rule than I used to be, largely because my short-term memory is not as good as it used to be, and I can't remember whether it got asked a month ago, never mind 2 years ago, and I don't like motoring questions much. That's pretty much it, I think. Who, why, what, where, when, whither, whence, wherefore, even the occasional whereby. So if you've got a question, should we just crack on? Honestly, this actually feels like getting into the bath after doing all the politics stuff. It's a weird job, this, because there is a perception, and this is obviously a perception that's shared by my employers as well, and it's not a criticism, I completely understand why. They are at their most appreciative for the work that we do on air on days like yesterday, when the news agenda is out of control, and we, with our colleagues, off-air colleagues, our producers and our assistant producers, we try to bring you information and commentary as it happens. And you know, on days like yesterday, in many ways, we're spoilt for choice. I mean, we were very lucky yesterday. My producer played a blinder in getting David Alan Green and Jolyon Maugham up as that story broke. David Alan Green's comments on this programme make front page news of the Daily Mirror today. But oddly, I think we earn our money on the days when there isn't any news. I think we earn our money on the broadcasting equivalent of a wet Tuesday night in Crewe, as football fans will appreciate. It's just an odd observation, that. And oddly, you work very, very hard on days like yesterday, but you possibly work even harder on days when you can't get the phones to ring for love nor money. It's a fate I haven't actually fell foul of for some time, but I never say never. It will come back round again one day. And you sit here at 10:15 and you go, oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. I mention that because today, Mystery Hour does feel like a genuine respite, a genuine rest from the political cut and thrust. But I've made pretty clear to you this week, I am loving the political cut and thrust at the moment on a purely professional level. I'm also intending to love this little period of respite. And if you're new to it, if you've joined us because of the political coverage here on LBC being pretty much second to none, then I hope you enjoy this. It is an exercise in light relief, but also illumination and elucidation. Mike's in Manchester. Mike, question or answer?
A question, please, James.
Carry on, Mike.
You earn your money every day, James. That goes without saying. But here's the question.
Here.
I need some advice.
Go on.
In a very posh Liverpool accent.
Yes.
I'm about to have a very important dining experience.
Go
at
on.
The end of which,
yes,
I would like some advice, please, as to what does one do with one's napkin? Does one refold it, or does one just leave it crunched on the table?
I don't know that I'm qualified to do etiquette advice much, but I have had quite...
I don't believe that for a minute.
I did go to a posh school, and I have had quite an interesting week. I have had quite an interesting week on this one. First of all, if your dining companion cares a jot about what you do with your napkin, chances are they're either a fraud or a wrong'un, because it's usually what the Harry Veasts and the aspirants and the pantomime toffs and the pretend posh people care about, these matters.
I'm actually dining with a member of the aristocracy, James.
Well, they're unlikely to care that much. Also, in my experience, members
go
of the aristocracy, they don't have appalling manners. You'd never find them sprawled across the front bench of the House of Commons, for example.
But
they're not as concerned. See, when I was growing up, I don't know if you were the same, Mum was obsessed with my table manners and various
as
other
was mine.
Various
yeah.
other P's and Q's. And then they sent me to public school, and I'd be sitting next to a Viscount, and he'd be practically eating his soup through his nostrils. I mean, they're quite middle class concerns, a lot of these etiquette based issues. However,
You paint a wonderful picture, James.
Happy days. Happy days, Michael.
Indeed.
Happy
indeed.
Days. Scrunch it up and chuck it on your plate. Or chuck it next
all
to your
right,
plate.
All right, mate. I'll do that, lads. Cheers, mate.
Do you want another little bit of trivia?
Go on.
I had lunch at a very reputable gentleman's club this week in London,
right.
In London's fashionable West End. I won't embarrass my host by telling you which one. But okay. The napkins there have a little buttonhole in them so that you can button it to your shirt and cover your tie and your shirt. And that was one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Well, that's a good idea. Let's go on Dragon's Den with that, shall we?
It's a date, although I don't know that we'll be able to claim copyright or indeed the patent. I'll take a round of applause for that. Qualifications? Exceedingly well-mannered. Exceedingly well-mannered. Also, when I was on holiday, I don't know about this one for Dragon's Den either. My little one is very amused by my inability to keep pairs of socks together. I know everybody is like this, but she finds it particularly amusing in my case. There's a theory in our family that the dog has got a secret stash of my odd socks somewhere, because I have about 30 odd socks. And my little one, when we were in France, went shopping with her mum, and she found socks that have got a button on one sock and a buttonhole on the other sock. Have you ever seen these? I've got them on now, actually. I'm not going to show you because we're on the radio. But you can button one sock to the other when you put them in the wash, which means they come back from the wash neatly together. They weren't cheap, bless her, and she spent some of her holiday money on buying me three pairs. I obviously refunded her immediately, but eventually, in my brave new world, everyone will have socks with a button on one and a buttonhole on the other. In the meantime, Mike, enjoy your lunch. It's 10 minutes after 12. Peter is in Bexley. Peter, question or answer?
It's a question, Ben. My question is, what is
old... I'll come back to you, my friend. The phone line has gone absolutely tonto. Chris is in Stamford Hill. Chris, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on.
In the past, the population of the Earth was fewer people than it is now.
Yeah.
And if you if you traced your family history back, you've got two parents, four grandparents, eight great-grandparents, etc. How many generations back do you have to go before you're related to everyone who was on the Earth at the time?
Do you think that's an answerable question?
I think it probably is.
Do you?
It's only maths.
I admire your optimism. I don't think you could. So,
eight,
I mean, 16, Genghis.
32, 64.
Yeah, well, no, it's all right. I can count. I've been practicing my counting lately, Chris. I'm doing countdown. I'm doing countdown next month. But they say everyone's kind of related to Genghis Khan, don't they? Or that if you so you're going back to a period of.
He was a cavalier with the.
He was very generous with his favours, Chris, I think, is the phrase you're looking for. I don't know, actually, and I'm not going to make an idiot of myself by poo-pooing this question, because the more I wibble on about it, the more possible it becomes that it's a good question. So how far back in time would you have to go before everyone was related to each other?
To your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents was everyone.
Yeah. Well, that's Adam and Eve, isn't it? Not actually.
Well, no, that's only two.
Yeah.
So there must be a number bigger than two, but the same as...
But you want biology. You want biology, not Bible.
Well, if you start with two people, then four, then six, then eight, going forward, then that must be a time when 2, 4, 6, 8 going backwards makes the same number.
Yeah. I think I understand. Sounds like my laugh. That. He copied my laugh. I put it on the list. How far back do you have to go before you personally are related to everybody?
Thank you, Jim.
You're very welcome, my friend. Who are you hoping to be related to? Most.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah, silly question. 12:12 is the time. How far back does Chris have to go before he would be related to everybody? It would be his great-great-great-great-great-great-great-what-rants. Let's try Peter in Bexley again. Peter is in Bexley. Question or answer, Peter?
This question, James.
Let's have another go.
My question is, when you buy gold on the stock market, do you actually own that gold? And if you wanted it delivered to you, could you have it delivered? Or is it something just virtual? Or how does that work?
I don't know if you needed to ring Mystery Hour for that, did you?
Well, can
you just ring your broker?
I don't trade. My son was interested in it, and I looked it up. Well, I didn't look it up. I went on to one of those virtual websites and where you can sort of buy and trade virtually, and you can buy gold and stuff like that. And I said, Dad, you know, you just bought 10,000. You know, if you bought that in real money, would you actually? Can you have that money, that gold, delivered to you, or is it just a virtual thing? How does it work?
Okay, so I mean, I think it's both. I think usually when you buy it, it's kept in some sort of facility for you. But if you absolutely insisted on having it delivered to your house in bullion form or coin form, then you could. But you mean on specifically when you look at the prices of gold?
Yeah, when you trade, when you buy it. So say for example, you go onto one of those any of those sort of websites where you can buy and trade online. You can say you can I don't know, you buy £1,000 worth of gold at the share price that is at that current moment.
Yeah. So in your portfolio, if you're buying...
But you never actually hold that gold.
I wouldn't have thought so. Do you know, there's a... Yeah, okay. I like that question. But as with the other one as well, I'm not sure I completely understand it, but that's a mark of my comprehension failing, not your explication. What's your boy called, Peter?
Max.
And Max wants to know.
Yes.
I like Max that. That's a healthy enthusiasm to have at the age of 12. It's better than playing Fortnite. He's got his eye on shorting the world's gold market. Good man. 12:15 is the time.
This is LBC Mystery Hour on LBC with Jake.
At the Bank of Antandek, mortgages are on the menu.
I was in the chippy last night and it hit me.
Go on.
We should give all our new mortgage customers £1,000 of spuds.
Potatoes?
Yeah, jackets, roasties, dolphin wires. I mean, what's not to love?
Hey, yeah, we could call it
Mashback. Genius.
Meanwhile, at Santander, they're giving their customers £1,000 cash back on selected first-time buyer mortgages. See what's possible at Santander.
Lending subject to status and criteria. Cashback given on completion and repayable if mortgage closed within 2 years. Offer can be withdrawn. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage.
James O'Brien, call 0345 6060973.
12:18 is the time. How far back would Chris have to go before he was related to everybody? If you see what I mean. And when you buy gold, how easy is it to get your hands on the gold? Max wants to know. Where are we going first? Sandy's in Bromley. Question or answer, Sandy?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
It's going back to Tudor times. That's where you can be related to everybody.
Shut the front door.
It's true. My tutor, I did a course on genealogy at the local education centre about 5 years ago, and it was a key question I asked my tutor, and that's what she said. And so that was my goalpost to trace my family tree as far back as I could to Tudor times.
Yeah, but you wouldn't be related to somebody in Mongolia in Tudor times, would you? I think that was what Chris was asking. This is what I meant when I said I didn't really understand the question.
I think if you were sort of born in this country and you've got lineage in this country, you know, that you can trace back in this country, then at Tudor times, that's what she said, if you can trace it back to England in Tudor times in one of your lineage lines, that you're related to everybody.
but in England, you're not getting a round of applause for this, madam. Sorry. First of all, well, I mean, who is your tutor? Your tutor might have been, your Tudor tutor might have been making it up.
She might have been, but it was a question that I asked, and that really was a goal for me as well. And I was able to go back.
And did you? Did you successfully do it?
I got back on one of my lines to 1400. Yeah,
really?
To Gloucestershire.
What were they doing? What were they doing in 1400? Your
forebears,
farmers.
All farmers in Gloucestershire. Yeah. So I managed to do it. So that was a goal for me, and one of the lines that I could trace it back to.
I think you've just rung in to boast about your genealogical exploits. I don't think there's any mileage whatsoever in the claim that Tudor times
If my tutor's listening, maybe she can phone in. There's a genealogy expert that maybe can back me up. Maybe.
There's too many variables in your answer, but it's if this was Nicholas Parsons on Just a Minute, I'd say what a charming contribution. You can have a point, but you do not get control of the subject matter on this occasion. So you can have my thanks, but no applause. Because can that be true? If it turns out to be true, I shall give the round of applause to Sandy. Johnny is in Kilburn. Question or answer, Johnny?
Hi, James. It's a question.
Carry on, mate.
You'll be familiar with the phenomenon of a dessert stomach when you're really full after starter and main course and think you couldn't eat.
I've never heard it called that before. Do you know, to go back to Mike in Liverpool, if you're still listening, mate, don't call it dessert. when you're having lunch with that posh fella. Call it pudding. Dessert is a very reliable signifier of non-patrician credentials. No one posh calls it dessert. It's almost as bad as toilet. But carry on, Johnny, carry on.
So with reference to that pudding slash dessert stomach, what's the science behind it? How is it possible that suddenly you can recover hunger that you definitely lost after a really filling couple of courses beforehand?
So you think I couldn't have another portion, I couldn't have another slither of steak and kidney pudding, but I do quite fancy that pavlova now you come to mention it.
Or four bowls of ice cream, exactly.
Or that's it. So, yeah, it must be the brain rather than the stomach, mustn't it? It must be something to do with receptors in the brain. And is that a thing? Dessert stomach is what you've called it? Because I think my producer spelt it wrong, and I thought it was desert stomach. I thought it was going to be a question about camels.
No, dessert stomach.
Dessert stomach. I shall find out for you. What is the science behind the fact that you think you're completely stuffed, you couldn't even eat a wafer-thin mint, but actually now you come to mention it, I probably could put away some pudding. 22 minutes after 12 is the time. Mo is in Dublin. Hello, Mo. It's been a while, mate.
It has indeed. How are you?
How are you getting on?
All good.
I think I'm in town at the end of the month.
Are you actually?
I think I'm doing a gig, yeah. I'm just waiting for some confirmation.
Oh, fabulous.
Will you come along? Will you? It's a Friday night,
oh,
I think.
Friday night, yeah, I'll be here.
Come and do it. I'm just trying to work out where this is. Anyway, this is a little bit niche for the majority of my listeners. Question or answer, mate?
It's an answer to the gold question.
Come on.
I mean, if you just want to benefit from the ups and downs, you can buy the actual spot price and you can buy the forwards price. That's kind of almost speculating on the price. If the young fellow wants physical delivery of the gold, he can actually do that through the stock market using something called a future.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a small problem with that.
Go on. Sorry, I shouldn't interrupt. You know what you're talking about.
The small problem is, generally speaking, as I understand it, the minimum contract size that you'll have on a future is $1 million for gold. So if he buys $1 million worth of gold, then, yeah, they will deliver $1 million worth of gold through a futures contract.
Wow. Most people probably don't take it, do they?
The futures contract, if you just wanted to speculate on the price in the exact same way as a futures contract, you'd just use a forward.
And where is that gold on whose price I'm speculating?
The price will be set kind of by the market, but the future, the person who's selling the future or buying the future, those are either side of the transaction. So that's the person, the other side will be the person to deliver to you. It could be a gold company. I mean, generally speaking, people don't hedge the physical part of gold because apart from the actual gold miners themselves.
Fair enough. I think that's fairly comprehensive qualifications.
I'm an analyst at an investment fund.
Ooh. you were just a kid with a crazy dream when we first met.
Indeed. Look at me now.
Round of applause for Mo. But keep an eye out, mate. I think it's the last Friday of the month, but it hasn't been confirmed yet. 24 minutes after 12. Mo came in, I should add, with a family member and contributed to some of the most powerful radio we've ever made. So you'll allow me to be delighted to hear from him. He's normally at work these days. Matt's in Ashstead. Matt, what would you like to say?
Hello, James.
Hello, Matt.
My question is regarding the monarchy and its powers. I mean, any Daily Mail or Express readers might want to put down a cup of coffee if they're drinking one.
Go on.
Do Parliament have the power to remove power from the Queen?
Well, she doesn't have any power.
Well, she does have to sign off laws.
Could Parliament pass a bill abolishing the monarchy?
Yes.
Yes?
Of course they could.
Yeah, of course they could.
Could they? Right, okay. And so that would remove any public spending or that went towards the Queen. So would that have to go via referendum or would that just be put through Parliament and that would be it?
You don't have to do anything by referendum, thank God. But otherwise you would never be able to abolish the monarchy. And the fact that you can, and the only way that you can make law is by passing law in Parliament. But
does the Queen not have to sign the law off?
Yeah, but... Oh, I see. Yeah, but... right. Okay. Sort of, yeah, probably. So she'd have to sign her... do you know what you're making me think of, Matt?
What?
It's a bit of an odd one, this, but there's a brilliant book by Sue Townsend, the Adrian Mole author, who wrote the woman who wrote Adrian Mole has a brilliant book about the Queen, the monarchy being abolished, and the royal family all have to move into... My friend Amanda Abington played Princess Anne in the adaptation at Christmas. David Walliams was the Prime Minister, but, and I'm trying to remember. Okay. I presume the Queen would have to sign it, but she can't say no, otherwise she'd get her head chopped off. Figure of speech. I don't know. You want... I mean, crikey, haven't you had enough constitutional law for one lifetime this week, Matt?
No, it's just... It's all this constitutional law. I mean, you know, it's opening up a real thirst for it now. I mean, I'm all over it. I can't get enough of it, James. I don't know about you, but...
Well, I do actually know exactly what you mean, and that's why I'm not going to deign to answer the question myself. I shall leave it for someone who knows more about this than what I do. But I like the question. Can Parliament essentially remove the Queen? Do you mean abolish the monarchy or remove the Queen and replace her with someone else?
Well, I mean, really, it was more about removing her from having any power as such and, I suppose, potentially from the public paying money towards her upkeep, you know.
Yeah. I'm 99% sure, but you want someone who sounds a bit more authoritative than what I do.
Well, I just wonder what the actual procedure itself is. How would they go about that?
Everything else, you get a bill, and then you take it for royal assent, and the poor old queen has to sign it. She has to sign her own P45. Sort of. Leave it on the board. 11:27. Eli's in Jerusalem. Eli, question or answer?
Hi. I sound quite nervous.
No, it's only me.
The question is like this. It's a question. How does the rocket fuel going to space propel itself without the element of oxygen?
It's not a very good phone line. I think I've understood the question. And once you get out of the atmosphere, then you carry on moving at whatever speed you were travelling. Again, you're going to need someone who's cleverer than I am to answer this. But there is no... there's oxygen in the fuel tanks. I don't quite understand the question.
Yeah, but the fuel...
They take their own oxygen with them.
Right, but the rocket fuel is... It sticks out from behind the rocket.
Yeah, I'm not. It's a terrible phone line, and I can't really question you as much as I'd like to. But if the question has been understood and can be answered by anyone, I'll put them straight on the board, Eli. I promise you. 11:28. Cheetan, I hope I've pronounced that correctly, is in Stratford.
Hi, this is Chetan.
Chetan, I beg your pardon. Question or answer?
That's all right. I've got a question.
Carry on.
Okay, why is Friday the 13th considered as an unlucky day?
Oh, I know this. Is it the day Jesus got crucified?
What was that?
Is it not the day Jesus was crucified?
I don't think so.
No? He definitely died on a Friday.
Was it the 13th?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, definitely. Hang on a minute. It was definitely Wednesday the 11th. So, Thursday the 12th. Yeah, Friday the 13th. There it is. Crikey. Do you know how
it's
I remember
on,
it? It was 2 days.
It
was 3 days before Easter, mate. It must have. So, mostly, these superstitions come from religion, but I shall put that on the board. Why is Friday the 13th considered unlucky? I think I was born on Friday the 13th, so that's given the lie to that myth forevermore. 12:30 is the time. Help Chetan out. Why is Friday the 13th unlucky? It is now time for the very latest news headlines.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345.
At the Bank of Antandek, mortgages are on the menu.
I was in the chippy last night and it hit me.
Go on.
We should give all our new mortgage customers £1,000 of spuds.
Potatoes?
Yeah, jackets, roasties, dolphin wires. I mean, what's not to love?
Hey, yeah, we could call it
mashback. Genius.
Meanwhile, at Santander, they're giving their customers £1,000 cash back on selected first-time buyer mortgages. See what's possible at Santander.
Lending subject to status and criteria. Cashback given on completion and repayable if mortgage closed within 2 years. Offer can be withdrawn. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage.
6060973.
It's 12:34. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we are seeking answers to the following questions. What is the science between dessert stomach? Fell into my own rubbish joke there. How far back does Chris have to go before he's related to everybody? Can Parliament sack the Queen? And why is Friday the 13th unlucky? I must improve the quality of my handwriting. And the question from Eli about rockets in space that I think I answered, but you're welcome to add to the answer I provided. Professor Hall is here. I wonder if that is the question which has tickled his academic fancy. Professor Hall is in Brighton. Question or answer, Hall?
James, I'm so excited about the rocket question.
Oh, go on.
No. You were partly right.
Yeah.
For rockets that go into space, they have to carry their own fuel plus their own oxidant. So any propulsion system has a fuel and an oxidant. So in your car, you've got petrol and you've got air and so forth. And in particular, the Saturn V rockets, which were used in the Apollo missions, they had kerosene and oxygen. So the guys were actually just sitting on the top of a big missile. And even common fireworks, you know, that very hissy, sort of violent way a firework takes off, that's got a fuel and it's also got an oxidant in it in the form of potassium chlorate. That's why it has that sort of so very intense flame. Now, the interesting thing is the space shuttle had a combination of liquid fuels and solid fuels, and the main tank on the space shuttle was liquid hydrogen.
Yes.
And liquid oxygen.
Yes.
And the solid fuel boosters were ammonium perchlorate and aluminium. And the thing about Challenger, which, as we all know, exploded 73 seconds after takeoff, was there was they just took off when it was too cold. And so the rubber grommet, which kept the solid fuel boosters from leaking, it was just too brittle. That's all it was. And some flame got between the rubber grommet and burnt through it. And just for a few seconds, for the 73 seconds, the aluminium from the solid fuel blocked the hole.
God.
And then it gave out, and it was literally all chance. And in the big analysis, you could see a little puff of black smoke on the launch pad. And Richard Feynman, the famous physicist in the Inquiry, he said, you know what happened? And he picked up a glass of water with ice in it and a little rubber tube. And he said, this is what happened. And he broke it and it snapped like a twig. And it's all about the temperature. So in summary, Eli's question was a relatively good one. You carry your own oxidant with you, fuel plus oxidant because you haven't got enough. And that's why you have multi-stage rockets, because you don't want to be carrying an empty fuel tank and it makes it more efficient.
Wow. Okay, I mean, I can sense your enthusiasm. It's practically contagious. What a brilliant answer.
I give a lecture on this because I'm quite interested in the science of it also, but I'm interested in the science of sort of disasters and air crashes and how sort of all these things mount up together. So it's not one mistake, it's several, and all the levels of redundancy fail. But this is it's very close to my heart. So.
Clearly, and we thank you for it. You've provided a clue to the answer to my next question. For anyone not clear, what are your qualifications?
I'm really, really lucky to be and delighted to be the Professor of Public Understanding at the University of Brighton.
And this
public
is
Understanding of Science, that is.
Your umpteenth round of applause, but a particularly enjoyable one for you, I can tell, and I'm glad. It's 12:38. Nicholas is in Brighton. Nicholas, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Nicholas.
It's for the Friday the 13th.
Go on.
I believe, and I know you hate that word, but I believe it dates back to when, was it Prince Philip or King Philip of France?
Well, I don't know. You're supposed to be providing the answers.
Yeah, but come on, you're a font of knowledge. You can fill in the blanks.
Well, go on then. I'm so easy to play, aren't I? Go on, what were you saying? What do you want to know? Which King of France did what?
I don't know, the Templars. Remember they rounded up the Templars all at once?
And that was on
Friday? Wanted the money because he was broke.
Oh, no, I'm on thin ice here with my personal knowledge.
The King of France, basically, this was with the whole sort of Catholic Church behind him as well, I think, at the time. Rounded up the Templars and put them all in jail and tortured and killed them, et cetera, because he wanted their money.
You've given too much detail. You should have just said it was the day on which the Knights Templars got done.
That there, what you just said.
Yeah, because you don't know what king it was, you don't know when it was, you don't know where it was, you don't know why it was.
That's basically the story I was given anyway.
I like it. That'll do for me. I don't know who was in charge when the Knights Templars got. I'm reading a little bit about the Duke of Guise and the Huguenots and the persecution of the Protestants and the exodus to this country, actually.
Do you read any Cornwell books?
Bernard Cornwell?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I'm back in the day.
The Sharp books.
And I really like the new ones about the kind of prehistory, about the Dark Ages, about the Vikings and the Anglo-Saxons. All that stuff's pretty special, too.
No, they're all good. Can't go wrong with it there.
Got yourself a round of applause, Nicholas.
Happy days.
That's it, isn't it? That's the highest accolade available on British radio. Matt's in Hove. Matt, question or answer?
I have a question, James.
Carry on, Matt.
When and sort of why did baked beans become part of an integral part of a full English breakfast?
Oh, I like that question.
It's been on my mind for some time.
Oh, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. That's a that's a beautiful question. Because we presume baked beans are a Heinz, essentially, an American invention or an American... one thinks of cowboys and that famous scene in Blazing Saddles. That's what I think of when I think of baked beans. And yet, you're right, I have never clocked, but everything else in a full... I mean, bearing in mind, you go to Ireland, it's a full Irish breakfast, but everything else on the plate, you could link to our farming industry, isn't it? It's pork and eggs in various different combinations.
And
maybe
mushrooms,
the odd mushroom, I was going to say, mushrooms if you're posh.
And I think, and some people still don't have baked beans. That's the thing, they just don't, they prefer it without.
What, are they purists?
Traditional.
Purists?
Traditionalists, yeah.
Well, maybe that's, so when did it become a thing? That's what we want to know. Because, you're right, a traditionalist would probably object to the premise of your question. He would say, indeed, I am incorrigible, has already been in touch to say that they're not an integral part of the Great British breakfast, the full English breakfast.
Exactly.
But to you and me, they are.
Yeah.
Very much so. I can't quite imagine a breakfast without beans.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right, you're on. Yeah, nice one. I like it. If you know the answer to that question, when did beans become a thing in the context of the full English breakfast? Give me a call, 0345-6060-973. Full Scottish breakfast, you get potato scones, usually. Irish, more likely to get some black or white pudding, I'd have thought. But the beans are always with us. Alistair's in Dunbarton in Scotland. Alistair, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on.
A courgette and a marrow.
Yes.
Exact same thing, except one's bigger than the other.
Are you sure?
Positive. I'm growing one out the back. I've grown a few.
What are you growing, courgettes or marrows?
Well, I've taken courgettes off, and they're quite small, but I've left one, and it's over a foot long, and it's now a marrow.
Well, when did it become a marrow?
That's my question. What size does a courgette become a marrow?
I knew that was going to be... That's a good... Have we not done that before?
Don't know.
Doesn't matter.
Maybe.
We're doing it now. Well, what? So when does a courgette become a marrow? It's a bit like when does a puddle become a pond?
I don't know.
No, I know. I'm just saying. But it's probably more measurable. What you need is a local show, isn't it? You know? They'll know. So someone who does fruit. I went to one once. It was actually surprisingly exciting. But the amount of passion that's invested in getting the right sort of shape of carrot is quite incredible. I will find out for you, Alistair. When do Alistair's courgettes become a... When did Alistair's former courgette become a marrow? At precisely what point in its growth did it cease to be a courgette? Did it become an ex-courgette and instead become a marrow? You're on. Get me an answer to that. We've only got... What we've got, 17 minutes left. 0345-6060-973 is the time. That little nod towards Monty Python there reminds me to steer you towards one of the most enjoyable interviews I've ever conducted with the great Sir Michael Palin, which is available on my Full Disclosure podcast at the moment. You can find that on the Global Player or wherever you download your podcast, or head over to the LBC website. It's a real treat. It's just, you must, if you're anything even remotely close to my age or older or a little bit younger, Michael Palin is just a good man, isn't he? He's just one of those people who brightens up the world. He shared some astonishingly interesting tales of his life and career, and a couple of things that, when I was a gossip columnist, would have constituted scoopettes. But it's the genuine and general tone of the whole thing. Very little to do with me, all right? It was one of those interviews where I didn't have to do much. Just bask in his charm and bonhomie. So do check that out if you get the chance. Michael's in Kennington. Michael, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry
it's a pleasure
on.
Speaking to you.
Well, let's see about that, Michael.
Let's go. Parliament is sovereign.
Yes.
Parliament can sack the Queen.
What? Parliament is what?
Sovereign.
No. What? You mean we've wasted the last 3.5 years of our lives pretending that it might not be?
Well, Parliament is sovereign, James. Okay. I know you full well know that. And the question may have seemed a little... I think it was what we'd call a curveball.
Yes.
Because what's going on with even Boris in today's news, you know, they're asking him, did he like Parliament? I don't think so. I think the Queen is very astute. She's had to steer many prime ministers through...
Oi! This is Mystery Hour.
Oh, but it's the question.
Well, answer the question then. I just slightly distracted. I won't lie to you. I had a sip of tea.
Okay.
I came back and you were wanging on about Brexit. We can't have that. This is our one hour of the week where we're guaranteed a bit of respite.
James, we're answering the question. The gentleman asked the question.
Can Parliament sack the Queen?
Yes, they can. Because also the case of proclamations, 12 co-rep 74. It established, Sir Edward Coke at the time, established that it was established that the king hath no prerogative, but that was
Sir
the
Edward
law
Coke.
Of the land. Yes, sir. Yes,
it's pronounced
yes,
Cook, sir. Earl of Leicester.
Yes.
Carry on.
And in that case, it established that the king hath no prerogative, but that which the law of the land allows.
Qualifications?
And so... I just have a higher diploma in law.
Good man.
At South Bank University.
Fantastic. And the Queen would have to sign that into royal assent, would she, or not?
Well, the Glorious Revolution as well, it's there.
But theoretically, if we pass this bill tomorrow to abolish the monarchy, would the Queen have to sign it?
Well, yes, she would.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? What if she refused? Off with her head.
Constitutional...
Crisis. That rings
a
bell.
Yes, James.
Round of applause for Michael.
Thank you, James. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Beautiful answer. 12:46 is the time.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:50 is the time.
At the Bank of Antandek, mortgages are on the menu.
I was in the chippy last night and it hit me.
Go on.
We should give all our new mortgage customers £1,000 of spuds.
Potatoes.
Yeah, jackets, roasties, dolphin wires. I mean, what's not to love?
Hey, yeah, we could call it mashback.
Genius.
Meanwhile, at Santander, they're giving their customers £1,000 cash back on selected first-time buyer mortgages. See what's possible at Santander.
Lending subject to status and criteria. Cash back given on completion and repayable if mortgage closed within 2 years. Offer can be withdrawn. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage.
My handwriting is so appalling. I've forgotten what questions need answering. Something to do with gold. Dessert stomach. Baked beans. Friday the 13th, we've done. Rocket fuel, we've done. Queen and Parliament, we've done. Courgette marrow. A couple of others. Tom's in Bristol. Tom, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
Okay, so a courgette is just a infant marrow. So all marrows turn into courgettes. Marrows tend to have much thicker skins than courgettes.
But at so what point does an infant marrow become a grown-up marrow?
When it's grown up.
No, you get lost. You can't get away with that. That's nonsense. So I say, how long is a piece of string? When? How old does it have to be? Or how big?
It's like when it becomes ripe, isn't it? It's like when it's a tomato ripe, it's because it's gone red. Marrows tend to have sort of yellow...
No, because a green tomato is a tomato, and a red tomato is also a tomato, but an infant marrow is a courgette.
But a marrow and a courgette are the same thing.
No, but it ceases to be a courgette at some point.
No. They are the same thing.
Then why don't we just call it a big courgette?
It's like an adult and a child are all people.
Humans. What's the word that unites them then?
Vegetable?
That'd be ridiculous. A carrot is a vegetable. I quite like this. I can't give you a round of applause. Because there has to be a point at which it becomes a marrow. There has to be a point at which you could enter it in a best marrow competition, for example.
Fair play.
Don't you think? What are your qualifications?
Pardon?
What are your...
My dad grows vegetables.
Did you check with him? Did you check with him, or are you doing this off your own back?
No, I'm just doing this off my own back.
Schoolboy error. Schoolboy error, Tom. You should have checked with your old man. He'd have known. He'd have known the difference between a courgette and a marrow. As it is, we're still in the dark. Nick's in Helston in Cornwall. Nick, question or answer?
Hello, it's an answer to the Friday the 13th one.
Okay, carry on.
It's older and simpler than the explanation about the Knights Templar. Jesus was crucified on the Friday.
That's what I said.
And he and the 12 disciples were at the Last Supper, so there were 13 at the Last Supper.
Yeah, there you go. And the Last Supper was that on the Friday or the Thursday?
Thursday.
On the Thursday.
On the 12th.
So Friday the 13th becomes the... I think you're right.
It was unlucky because there were 13 at the Last Supper.
And that's why you don't have... You know, you never set a table for 13 because it theoretically echoes the Last Supper until Judas did one, as the Bible relate. I know what your qualifications are because they're the same as mine. I put money on it. Qualifications?
I went to Catholic school.
I knew it. Carry on. Round of applause for Nick. Well done. I like the Knights Templar thing as well, but that does seem to me to be to have the sort of Occam's razor benefit of simplicity. It's 12:53. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Mystery Hour is upon us. The question about baked beans is probably my favourite. When did baked beans become part of the full English breakfast experience? And dessert stomach. What's the science behind the fact that we can think we're absolutely stuffed, but somehow still find a little bit of room for pudding? I have had an answer from the botanist and general genius James Wong, but he has submitted it via Twitter, which is not allowed, James. However, if we haven't had an answer by close of play, by Sheila time, as we call it here at LBC Towers, what's the time? Sheila time! Then I will probably read out James's tweet. Hugh's in Cardiff. Hugh, question or answer?
Answer.
In your own time, Hugh.
So I'll try not to mess this up on the radio, but an answer to the common descendant for humankind.
How far back does Chris have to go before he's kind of related to everybody?
Well, according to a guy called Brian Sykes, who's a geneticist, he talks about the seven mothers of the European population.
Just European?
That's European,
okay.
But in total there are 30 known women that can all trace their lineage back to a single woman, probably in Africa.
Wow, going back
back to about 140,000 years.
Gosh.
And that's through the analysis of mitochondrial DNA.
140,000 years?
To a common ancestor of humankind.
I think that's what he was asking about, isn't it?
I think so, because if you go back that, we are all related.
Obviously. We kind of have to be.
So you need a common ancestor.
Yes. And there's a name for it. What's her name? The African...
They've all got different names. I can't remember
the
original or something. You know, they call it something like the original Eve. But in his book, he quotes, and they have seven. Certainly in Europe, we have these seven tribes, as they call them.
And 140,000 years at least provides Chris with a handle, doesn't it?
Yes, should do.
Love it. Qualifications?
I am a doctor, but I'm not a geneticist. But
I'm not even a doctor.
Science.
You win.
round
of applause for you.
Cheers, thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. Congratulations. Phil's in Ainsworth. Phil, question or answer?
Oh, hi, James. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Is it about beans?
No, it's a steward's inquiry on the gold issue.
Come on, beans. We want beans. Go on, inquire away.
it's in Winchester, by the way. My surname's Ainsworth. But anyway...
Oh, I apologize. How did that happen? How bizarre.
I don't know.
Carry on. Can we change that? Poor fellow. He's got his old ID out there now. He's been hacked. Carry on, Phil, in Winchester or Westwood.
The chaps pass you, right? You can buy futures contracts for gold, and it would be £1 million worth. But you can easily buy what's called exchange-traded funds backed by gold. And you can buy those in much smaller amounts. And just see any broker will do that for you.
And where is the gold?
The gold is kept in vaults with the banks, big global banks.
Yes.
And the fund itself doesn't own any gold. The fund is backed by gold derivatives. And of course, the chap can buy physical gold as well. You can buy, you know, a gram of gold at a gold dealer, 40 quid. So
I think you're embellishing the original answer, not replacing it. Mo's quite a sensitive soul. He'd have taken time out of work. He'd come out in his lunch hour to answer that. I don't want him feeling all regretful, but I'm going to give you a round of applause as well. You don't know the answer to the beans question by chance, do you?
I wish I did.
So do I.
Sadly, can't help you.
Round of applause for Phil. Don't laugh, Phil, in Winchester. Do I know you? I recognise your surname.
There's a few of us about.
I don't
think we ever had the pleasure, but
I shall look forward to it. Yeah, exactly. Something on the horizon. Something to look forward to. Round of applause for Phil in Winchester.
Thank you, sir.
No, thank you, sir. David's in Pinner, not to answer the beans question, but I'll try not to sound too disappointed. Question or answer, David?
It's an answer to the courgette, James.
Oh, marvellous. Go on.
Courgettes, when they start to grow, are a dark greeny colour.
Yes.
The bigger they get lighter.
Yes.
There is no specific time when they become a marrow. It's all to do with the weather and stuff like that and temperature, sun.
All right, but so when it could you take a marrow to a best courgette class at a show and argue your point?
No, because they're totally different colours.
I don't know. I mean, who checks? Who judges the colour? Is it on the Dulux colour chart when it moves from courgette to marrow?
It could well be, Jason.
I'll give him a round of applause because I'm feeling generous. I'm going to squeeze in Piers. I'm very, very late. It's almost Sheila time. Piers, question or answer?
Answer.
Quickly.
Baked beans.
Yes.
Baked beans were first brought into this country by Fortnum & Masons in 1901, but in 1940 the Ministry of Food classified Heinz beans as essential food, and then it became basically the breakfast food because they used to add it to the rest of the stuff to build up their breakfast.
Because under rationing, its preservative powers would have been particularly well valued. You could keep
Correct.
It in the cover for a round of qualifications.
Just general knowledge.
Round of applause for Piers.
Thank you, sir.
Beans. Here's Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you. Brexit has done strange things to people, has it not? Government Minister Kwasi Kwarteng has taken to hiding behind Nigel Farage's skirt as a way of trying to disguise his own Trumpian attack on Scottish judges. Nobody's skirts, though, can hide the threat from leaving the EU without a deal. Operation Yellowhammer has, in part at least, been released and reveals a litany of vital supplies and services threatened by no deal. I know the idea of a clean break from the EU appeals to lots of you because you tell me so, even if no such thing exists. But if the price is worse conditions for the poorest, no care for some elderly people, for some more elderly people, and medicine shortages, is it still worth it? Is your no-deal Brexit still worth it?
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.